We're learning about how we study and talk about and broadly label non-religious people. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. As secularism grows, there's more attention being paid now to how we properly measure the growth and the distinctions within the non-religious. And Pew Research Center says there are more than a billion religiously unaffiliated people in the world, and they are the third largest religious grouping behind Christians and Muslims. But taking a headcount has drawbacks. What role does religion have in your life, or used to have in your life? Does religion bring you comfort, community, maybe clarity? Or are you not religious? What does that mean? Join in at any point throughout the hour. We're at 800-642-1234. Ryan Cragen is a sociology professor at the University of Tampa. He has a new article in the journal Secularism and Non-Religion. It's called Questions You Should Never Ask an Atheist Towards Better Measures of Non-Religion and Secularity. Ryan, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, this gets a bit tricky and cuts to the heart of your research when we ask for a working definition here. When you say non-religions or unaffiliated, what do you mean?
It's a great question. It's a question I get asked quite regularly. Basically, for sociologists who study religion, we think about religiosity, which is a bigger picture than just religion, as having multiple dimensions, right? So it's this idea that you can be religious or non-religious in multiple ways. And kind of the standard approach now is to think about it as having three B's, right? So you've got behavior. That's what you do. Do you go to church? Do you pray? Do you do things that are related to religion? There's belief, what you believe, and then there's belonging, and that's whether you self-identify as having a religious affiliation. So when we describe somebody as being non-religious, we're only focused on that one B of those three, which is the belonging part, and we're saying that they report having no religious affiliation. So that's all we mean by it, is just that one dimension of religiosity.
Oh, so the other two, like belief and your behavior, they fall away?
They can, but they don't necessarily have to. So we now know that the non-religious, right, those who have no religious affiliation, it's the single largest group in the U.S. It's now about a quarter of the U.S. population. When asked on a survey, what is your religion, if any, about a fourth say they don't have a religion. But that doesn't necessarily mean they don't go to church, or that they don't believe in God, or they don't believe in heaven, or they don't pray. Those are different dimensions of religiosity. And among the non-religious, some of them do go to church. Some of them do pray. So you don't have to, they don't have to align. Often they do, but they don't have to align in congruous ways.
So you could believe in God or a higher power and still be non-religious or unaffiliated?
Absolutely. Yeah. They don't have to be hand in hand, right? I was actually thinking about this interview yesterday, and I was thinking, you know, after decades of studying religion as a sociologist, probably the biggest lesson that I've learned is that people are radically inconsistent in how they experience religion, right? That we are filled with inconsistencies as humans, and it's hard for those of us who study this to capture that without going kind of down complicated paths.
Oh, because we're deeply flawed. We do things that just aren't, we don't make the best decisions. And when it comes to religion, that isn't an exception.
Right. Yeah. Humans are logically inconsistent. It's rare to find somebody who has, not that people don't think about these things, right? But to fully kind of get to the point where they're like, all right, everything is going to be consistent. To use one of my favorite examples, I've interviewed countless non-religious people and atheists. And in one of those, I interviewed someone who identified as an atheist. They said, I don't believe in a God or a higher power. And just as a kind of a series of questions in an interview, I had also later in the interview asked, do you pray? And this particular individual said, yes. And it just blew my mind, because I'm like, wait, hold on. You don't believe in a God or a higher power, but you pray. And I was like, can you describe what you're doing? And they said, well, I send my thoughts out into the ether. And that's it. And it makes me feel good. And I was like, I don't understand. I'm not trying to be judgmental, right? I was genuinely just trying to get clarification, but that was one of those instances where I was like, this is just radically inconsistent, but that's okay. That's just how we are as humans.
Because when we use the word pray, we often very closely link it to perhaps a specific religion or doing a very specific thing.
Right, exactly. And it doesn't have to be that way.
We're talking with Ryan Cragen. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Tampa, co-author of the book Organized Secularism in the U.S. You can join in if you don't consider yourself religious. What are your beliefs? Do you believe in a God or a higher power? Are you spiritual? What does spirituality mean to you? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So do people who say they're spiritual, Ryan, but not religious, fit into this category of being non-religious or unaffiliated?
Most typically would, right? Because again, all we mean by that category is that they report no religious affiliation. So if somebody says, I'm spiritual but not religious, they're kind of putting themselves into that category. And you'll note when I was talking about the dimensions of religiosity, that really says nothing about spirituality. Spirituality is kind of like a separate whole concept, right? And there are lots of definitions of spirituality. I mean, we could spend a lot of time unpacking what that means. But people can be religious and spiritual. They can be non-religious and spiritual. Those two things, again, don't have to align in any specific way. So many people who do say, I'm spiritual but not religious, would in fact fall under the group that we're referring to as the non-religious, even if they say, you know, I have this connection to something higher than me, or I feel a connection to all of humanity, or I meditate on a higher plane. None of that prevents them from being non-religious.
Okay, so if the non-religious are the largest group of the people in the U.S. Affiliating with being non-religious, is it because perhaps researchers have been more interested in studying this grouping and creating this grouping? Or is it in fact that we're just changing our ways and changing our thoughts?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So, and this might lead to some other topics down the road here, but we've been tracking this group, right, the non-religious, for quite a while. I mean, this goes back since we started doing surveys that included questions about religion. And it, in fact, it used to be on the census that we asked people's religious affiliation. We don't do that anymore. So that group kind of exists in a sense, but of course it's created like most groups are by people talking about it. So the interesting thing is many of the people who would fall into that group probably don't even identify as being part of it, right? Which makes it rather different from, say, Catholics in the U.S., right, who are 20 to 22% of the U.S. population. If you ask a Catholic and they identify as a Catholic, I am a Catholic, they sense that they're part of this group. Whereas the non-religious, there's nothing that really makes them cohere as a group. Now, there are subsets, right, who belong to organized secular groups. They would clearly feel a sense of identity as part of that group. But the majority, the vast majority of non-religious people in the U.S. have no sense of belonging to a quote-unquote group of the non-religious.
We're talking about research on people who identify as non-religious and how it informs the way we look at spirituality today and our belief systems. University of Tampa sociologist Ryan Cragen studies secularism and he stays with us. Do you identify as non-religious? What does that mean to you? Have you always identified that way? Or did you used to be religious and then change your views? What prompted that? Join in with your story, your definitions, 800-642-1234. Email ideas, WPR.org. We'll be back to this hour's conversation in just a minute. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about how we study, label, and how we understand non-religious people. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. When researchers try to make comparisons between religious and non-religious people, they may not actually be capturing whether or not someone is non-religious. And there are some ways to measure how religious or non-religious someone is. It doesn't neatly fit in a box that can be checked. Meanwhile, reports on the non-religious are all around us. The Democratic National Committee has just passed a resolution acknowledging the importance of non-religious Americans. It says the religiously unaffiliated overwhelmingly share the party's values. So are you a non-religious person or from a religious family? Is your partner religious, but you're not? Or maybe it's the opposite. How do you work through the differences? Be part of this 800-642-1234. University of Tampa sociology professor Ryan Cragen is co-author of Organized Secularism in the U.S. He has a new article in the journal Secularism and Non-Religion, and he stays with us. Let's go to the phones now with Marcus joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus.
Hi. So I was baptized, First Communion, confirmed Catholic. As I've aged, I've considered myself more spiritual than religious because I feel like there's too much man involved in religion. However, that being said, I wear a set of dog tags that say Fearless Soldier of God. And then knowledge and truth is the weapon, faith is the holy armor, the Lord God is my commander in chief.
All right, Marcus, how do you connect all those dots there, having been born and raised a Catholic, and where you are today? What happened?
Life.
Life.
Just different things. At one point I was dead for 3.5 minutes at Freidert after an accident. Got divorced, found love again, and just basically been on a path my whole life. And I've pretty much used the Bible as my guide because I believe in the Bible, but I don't believe in necessarily all of the dogma associated with religion.
Ryan, what do you take away from Marcus's story?
Yeah, I think that's a great illustration of one of the forces that is leading to the growth of the non-religious in the U.S. And I don't necessarily mean to go down this path, but certainly the sex abuse scandal or the child sex abuse scandal that has played out in the Catholic Church over the last decade or plus has led people to really kind of become disenchanted with organized religion. And that doesn't necessarily, like we said, that doesn't necessarily mean that people are giving up all aspects of religiosity. Marcus is a perfect example of somebody who still finds value in religion, right? But not in the organized religion that is run by individuals who have sometimes a greater allegiance to the institution than they do to the followers and the members.
So what does research say about how often people switch between religious and non-religious affiliation?
Another great question. So there is some fairly recent research to suggest that a sizable percentage of Americans actually do switch religious affiliations at some point during their lifetime, ranging in the area from 40 to 60%. There's also research, it used to be the case back in the 1980s, we're going back a little ways, that people were just as likely to switch into non-religion as they were to switch out of non-religion into religion, but that's shifted. So recent research going back just 5 or 6 years now suggests that once people become non-religious, they are particularly unlikely to go back to religion. So what's now happening is lots of people are being raised non-religious, people are leaving religion and becoming non-religious, and there used to be more shuffling or switching between those identity statuses, but now that's not happening nearly as much. Once people become non-religious, they just don't see any reason to go back to organized religion.
Why do you think that is?
This gets into some kind of complex theories that we've had in the sociology of religion for quite a while. The broadest theory is referred to as secularization. And the general thrust of secularization is that as societies modernize, religion suffers, basically. And the example that I use with my students all the time is most of them drive cars with internal combustion engines, but they don't know how those engines work, right? They just have no idea how those engines work. But when I say, okay, so if your car broke down, how many of you would try and pray over it to fix it or to cast a spell or to you know, cut the head off a chicken and perform some magical ceremony. They're all like, that's crazy. That's insane. I said, but you don't know how to fix it. For all intents and purposes, for you, it's magic. Hmm. They say, no, it's not magic. Somebody knows how to fix it. And that is basically a reflection of modernity and modern thinking. We may not understand everything around us, but we know that somebody does, and we know that it's not driven by supernatural forces. And that mentality, that understanding, is increasingly pervasive in society. So more and more people, when they get sick, when they break a bone, when something bad happens, they don't immediately go, oh, this is something supernatural that did this. This is God. They just recognize that these are natural forces. This is what happens in life. And as that grows increasingly pervasive, people see no need to adhere to a religious worldview.
We're talking with sociologist Ryan Cragen from the University of Tampa. You can join in with your thoughts as we look at the distinctions and the gray area around what it means to be non-religious or religiously unaffiliated in our country today. 800-642-1234. Let's go to Pete now, joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Pete. What are your thoughts here?
My thoughts are, it's interesting to see the evolution with the church that I was raised in, Catholicism. I mean, you know, my parents followed whatever the Pope said, very authoritarian. And I remember talking to my parents, I would say, this doesn't make sense. It goes against what society, I mean, birth control and all these things. So I think especially that church has just, they were on the wrong side of a lot of issues, and people figured that out. And I think now people are, they still want the community, so they're going to some of these new age type churches that will pretty much let you believe whatever they want. They're not going to make the same mistake. They're not going to tell you what to believe. So that's...
So Pete sounds like very compromised by this authoritarian upbringing in your church. Ryan?
Yeah, he's hitting at a couple of issues that I think are also contributing to this. There was a report that came out just a couple of years ago suggesting that for young people who are even more likely to be non-religious, so under 30, it's about one third of the population report no religious affiliation. And one of the biggest drivers of this is many religions have continued to adhere to the idea that being gay or lesbian, and that's not even to mention bisexual or transgender or queer, but being gay or lesbian is not in line with God's will. And that's really driving a lot of young people out of religion. So he hit on abortion and birth control, some other things, but certainly the positions, call them political or social or moral, that many religions continue to hold regarding certain progressive values are just not resonating with young people these days. And a lot of them just don't see the relevance, just like Pete was saying, right? So Pete was saying it just doesn't fit with modern society and modern ways of thinking. Some religions are adjusting. That's absolutely the case. But that leads down a different path, right? So if religions adjust to modernity, then people see no real reason to continue to adhere to them, which then causes problems for more progressive religions as well.
Well, let's bring in Cody with thoughts on this. Cody in Oconomowoc. Hi.
Good morning, Kate. How are you doing?
Doing well. What do you hear?
Well, when I was younger, I'm 32 now, and until about a year ago, I would have identified as non-religious. I guess I wouldn't even identify by it. I just wasn't exposed. I just didn't have any religion, didn't really know anything. And quite some time ago, actually, one of my really good friends, we got in a conversation about religion. And so I really don't consider anything.
Oh, wow. Cody, you're breaking up. I'm so sorry. Are you still there? You're breaking up on us. Yeah, hi.
Yep. I was actually called an atheist by a number of people, and I'm not even sure what that meant. And I kind of found it insulting at the time, and I think that had part of why I stuck with the non-religion for so long, again, until about a year ago when I found Christ and became Christian.
Well, Cody, I want to toss this back to Ryan for a moment. And Cody's saying, you know, I was insulted by being called an atheist.
Yeah, that still happens in the U.S., right? So There's quite a bit of research suggesting that atheist is a pejorative label that people use in the U.S. To try and kind of separate people out. Some of my own research, some of the research of people like Will Gervais at the University of Kentucky, that atheist for a long time in the U.S., and this has not been the entire history of it, but for a very long time in the U.S., was associated with communism. It also reflects kind of a double rejection, right? So there are people like Cody who, you know, said he wasn't really religious. You can say you're not religious and people are like, okay, so you just haven't found a religious home, or, you know, it doesn't necessarily specify anything beyond just not having a religious affiliation. But when you say you're an atheist, you're basically telling people, not only am I not religious, which not all atheists are non-religious, but we'll come back to that, but I reject that your God is real, right? Mm. And that is really confrontational to people. People have a really hard time being confronted with somebody who is taking a very kind of direct position and saying, no, your God doesn't exist. So it does get used as a pejorative label. Now that's shifting.
And right? Let's pause right there on the shift with University of Tampa sociologist Ryan Cragen. We'll be back to this conversation right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about non-religious affiliation and how we study secularism in America. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Researchers used to assume being non-religious meant that someone didn't believe in a god or gods, plural, that they didn't attend church or hold religious beliefs. But with growing numbers of non-religious, scholars are now scrutinizing how we measure this group and why it's difficult to lump people into a non-religious category. Pew Research says religiously unaffiliated account for about 1 in 6 people worldwide. So how accurate is that? And what does that mean for our world today? Do you identify as non-religious? What does that mean to you? What role does religion play in your life, or used to play in your life? We're at 800-642-1234. You can join in. And we're with University of Tampa sociologist Ryan Cragen for the hour. His recent article is called Questions You Should Never Ask an Atheist, and it's in the journal Secularism and Non-Religion. Ryan, I want to pick up on where we left off on atheism and how you see some transitions there.
Sure. So we were going down the path of attitudes towards atheism shifting, and I do want to kind of go back really far very quickly. There's a great book by Tim Whitmarsh called Battling the Gods, and he talks about the idea that atheism as a concept has been around as long as religion, probably, but he focuses on kind of the classical world and how atheism used to be just straight a pejorative. It was an insult, and it didn't necessarily mean that the person who was being called an atheist didn't believe in God, just that they didn't believe in the God that you adhered to, right? That you believed in. So for instance, Socrates was called an atheist. That was one of the charges that was leveled against Socrates, even though he actually wasn't, right? Now there were some people who genuinely were atheists in the sense that we use it today, where they didn't believe in gods or anything like that. But it's for much of its history, it's been used as a pejorative. What is shifting today? So coming all the way back up to the present, during the Cold War period, which some of us still remember, right? We did in the U.S. intentionally try and set ourselves as in opposition to the godless communists in the Soviet Union. And we did that with some very specific practices. That's when we put In God We Trust and Under God, In God We Trust on the money and Under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. We did that during the 1950s to specifically say we're religious people, they're the atheists. And what that did is it linked atheism and communism together in the minds of Americans. So whenever somebody would say, oh, I'm an atheist, the very next question was, are you also a communist? And so those two ideas were just like antithetical to what it meant to be an American. That carries through all the way up to the 1990s when the Cold War kind of ends, right? We have the collapse of the war, the wall. And then those two concepts, communism and atheism, they begin to separate in the minds of Americans to where today, if somebody were to say, I'm an atheist, the very next question is not going to be, are you also a communist?
Right.
They're going to head a different path, right? And that's fine. But that means the attitudes towards atheism are actually shifting pretty radically in the U.S. today.
Do you see that as a positive? And where are they shifting then?
Yeah, well, positive in the sense that we want to have a more welcoming, opening society for everybody, right? So regardless of your religious worldview or your non-religious worldview, we want people to be accepted. So if that's the perspective that you take, like we're open and welcome to anybody, then absolutely, this is a very much a positive trend. I'm sure others would disagree with that. But certainly people are becoming more and more accepting of atheism as a legitimate, accepted worldview in the U.S. today.
Let's bring in Janet now in Madison. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning. So I'm, again, one of those people who was raised Catholic with the baptism, the first Holy Communion, the confirmation, a marriage. And I think it was at the level of first Holy Communion when I realized it was a load of hooey. So I did it because that was what was expected of me by my family. And I am of an age where you just didn't buck the family too much. But I will assure you, I'm not a communist. I am now an atheist. I thought about it a long time. I can't believe. I just can't. I'm not built that way. My brain doesn't work that way. I'm trained as a scientist. I don't see any evidence.
And how does it feel for you to say, hey, I identify as atheist? What does that feel like?
What does it feel like? It's freeing.
It's freeing.
Yeah, it's freeing. I don't have expectations of 5,000 different little religions who want to put me in a peg. I'm a square peg in a round hole a lot of times, partially because I'm a woman. And I don't have to deal with them.
Janet, thanks for those thoughts. She finds it freeing, Ryan.
Yeah, we actually, a lot of researchers who have started to interview atheists, they're finding that very thing, that many people who were religious, right, raised in a religion, when they leave, they report that there was a great deal of freedom. And I think there's a little bit of nuance that can be added to that. It can be hard to leave a religion because religion does provide a pretty coherent worldview for people, right?
And it's structure.
It tells you how to think. Yeah, it's structure. I mean, it makes a lot of sense for people. And sometimes it's comfort too, right? All of that is like this really nice package. And so when you leave, yes, it's freeing, but it can also be scary and hard because now you individually are responsible for building your own worldview. And that's not to say that there aren't some non-religious worldviews like secular humanism, but it can be very challenging to go through that process of like all these things I used to believe, all these attitudes and ideas that I held and behaviors that I used to engage in, they're all gone. Now I have to figure out my own. It's freeing. And for some people, that's great. They really embrace like, I can make my own decisions. I get to think through all these things. For other people, it's a little scary to think through like, oh, wow, how do I figure all this out?
Well, returning to non-religious and the religiously unaffiliated, you're looking at it more like a spectrum. Can you help us understand what the spectrum looks like?
Sure. So it can get a little complicated, but there's a way to think about non-religion, particularly those who are secular on that spectrum, right? So those who reject spirituality, those who reject all forms of the supernatural, we would put them at one end of the spectrum, right? And then at the other end are basically those who would accept the supernatural, those who would say they have an affiliation with religion, organized religion. And you can think about it as that kind of really big spectrum. the nice thing about thinking about it that way is that one pole or one end is the secular, and then we're basically thinking about all of the religious as being on other ends. Now, what that means is obviously different religions value different things when it comes to what it means to be religious, right? So Buddhists, religious Buddhists, right, devout Buddhists, don't do the same things that Catholics do, that Muslims do, that Jews do. All of those are kind of different ends, but they all can be contrasted with those who are truly secular, right? Mm-hmm. Who have no religious affiliation, don't believe in anything supernatural, don't have a conception of spirituality that aligns with something supernatural. So you can think about them as kind of one big continuum with the two poles.
We're talking with Ryan Cragen. He's a professor of sociology at the University of Tampa. He has a new article out in the Journal of Secularism and Non-Religion. You can join in with your thoughts here, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Troy now, joining us from Muskego. Hi, Troy.
Hello. I think for my generation and younger, technology has changed a lot of how we get information. So I think I would consider myself spiritual. I think the new thing is, like you say, you're spiritual, that you don't specify a specific religion. And I think that comes from, in the past, people used to get their information when they went to church. They would get it from a pastor, older people, and they would kind of like take it as the God, like that was the word, whatever that pastor said. And they didn't really do the research themselves. So I think my generation kind of does their own research, and they kind of feel like they can make their own decisions. And I guess I kind of would tie that in with like politics. Either you watch one type of news channel, or you, my generation likes to watch multiple, and they like to formulate their own opinion.
Troy, thanks so much for the call. It sounds like Google has had an impact on how we see religion. Ryan?
Yeah, that's certainly possible, right? There have been a couple of studies that have shown a correlation, but I'm quite wary to say that it's causal, right? Mm-hmm. So many of your listeners may know that, right, correlation does not equal causation. So we have seen, and the timing is really convenient, right? The rise of the non-religious started in the early 1990s. That's also when the internet took off. And so a lot of people are like, oh, the internet is responsible. But then if you step outside of the U.S. context and you look at some other countries like the U.K. or Canada or Australia, the rise of the non-religious actually happened earlier. So you could say, oh, religion is probably the internet is probably facilitating it. That's probably true, but I'm really reticent to argue that it's causal at this point.
How do survey questions and how they're worded, can they skew the results as to how we look at people's belief systems?
Absolutely. So you've mentioned a couple of times the article that just recently came out, Questions You Should Never Ask an Atheist. I use an example in there. It's a survey question that was developed, I believe, originally by Gallup, but is now used in a couple of other surveys. And it is one of the most awful survey questions that I've ever run into. And it's actually kind of worth unpacking. The question itself is, irrespective of whether you attend a place of worship or not, would you say you are A, a religious person, B, not a religious person, or C, a convinced atheist? And there's so many problems with this. One, it's conflating, as your listeners are now aware, it's conflating religious identity or affiliation, the belonging part, with belief. Because they're asking, are you a religious person versus a convinced atheist, right? We're running out of time.
We're going to pause right there and continue to look at that Gallup question with University of Tampa sociologist Ryan Cragen as our guide. He's giving us a tour of non-religious and how we represent people and study secularism in our society today. 800-642-1234 for you to join in. We'll get back to this conversation in just a moment. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.
I'm Cheryl Gasser. I'll be your host for a WPR travel adventure with Earthbound Expeditions to New Zealand, February 10th through 23rd. We'll have an expert Kiwi guide throughout the adventure that includes 13 nights in four-star hotels, cruises in Auckland and Milford Sound, a train ride from Christchurch to Arthur's Pass, and more than 20 meals. A full itinerary can be found at our WPR travel page, wpr.org/travel.
Support for the WPR Mike Simonson Investigative Reporting Fellowship is provided in part by a gift from Frank L. and Mary E. Nicolay. The Mike Simonson Investigative Reporting Fellowship helps WPR provide in-depth news coverage throughout Wisconsin. Support also comes from the Wisconsin Historical Society, hosting American Style and Spirit with author and historian Jane Bradbury. An evening of fashion, culture, and history. September 18th in Madison. WisconsinHistory.org.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about how we research, measure, and label non-religious people in our country. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And as we've been talking about this hour, it's difficult to measure in this area, and it may be useful to think of non-religious people on a spectrum. So where do you fall on the spectrum of religious and non-religious people? Do you have friends or family in the same boat as you, or do you ever feel isolated because of your beliefs? 800-642-1234. We're talking with University of Tampa sociology professor Ryan Cragen. He's co-author of the book Organized Secularism in the U.S., and he stays with us. Ryan, as you were talking there about the Gallup poll asking people if they were religious, not religious, a convinced atheist, or not sure, regardless of whether they attend services. So what problems do you see with this question?
Right. So there are many. One of them that I think is very easy to see is they're basically contrasting the belonging concept, right? So that dimension of religiosity with the belief. Really what they should have if they wanted to ask the question is, are you a convinced theist versus a convinced atheist? Those are comparable because atheism is belief, whereas religious affiliation is belonging. So they're not actually doing a one-to-one comparison. It's really problematic. And then on top of that, there's this classic idea in survey construction that you should only ever be able to fit into one box, if that's the idea, if people are forcing you to choose. But in that question, most convinced atheists are also not religious people, right? Mm-hmm. So they're forcing them to choose, which one are you? Are you not a religious person or are you a convinced atheist? When in fact, most atheists would say I'm both. So the question itself is just a horrendous question. I mean, it's a beautiful example of how not to design a survey question. And what it ultimately is doing is it's driving down the number of people who would say that they're atheists by putting a qualifier on there saying I'm a convinced atheist. Well, what does that even mean, right? And why aren't we saying, are you a convinced religious person or a convinced theist? There's just legions of problems in that question.
And it sounds like fill in the blank is also an issue. So what is the best way to get at that higher power question? How can researchers, you know, best understand the scope and diversity of people's beliefs?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think we're still wrestling with that to some extent. I think at a minimum, what researchers need to do and what anybody who's kind of investigating this, they need to make sure that they separate out these dimensions. So you can ask a question about religious affiliation, which is separate from a question about belief in God or other religious beliefs. And when we do that, we actually see some really interesting things. So we'll get about one third of the atheists in the US who say, they don't identify as atheists, but they say, I don't believe in a God, right? So about one third of them are actually people who report a religious affiliation. And I think that's fascinating, right? What that suggests is your listeners who do go to religious services, the next time they're there, they should look around and kind of ask themselves, how many of the people in this congregation are actually atheists? Because there are atheists in most religious congregations in the U.S. today. Those don't have to line. So we have to separate those things out and ask them in different ways.
Let's bring in Mike now in La Crosse. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It's funny you talk about the survey because back in 1986 when I was in college, there was a question in a sexuality class I had that asked us whether we were homosexual or heterosexual. And 70% of the people in the class didn't know what heterosexual even meant. They knew what homosexual meant, but they didn't know what heterosexual. So example of a survey that needs definition. But my comment, my question is, I wrote my MBA thesis on attendance and church attendance back in 2010 at a local college. And it was very interesting about the reasons why people weren't attending church, which is kind of related because we were going through the change in the ELCA, Lutheran Church, about allowing and recognizing homosexual marriages in the church and welcoming that community. And I'm wondering if your guest, he mentioned the communist connection back in the, you know, 50s and 60s, if the church has really pushed that group away, and now that it's so much more socially acceptable, I really see churches bringing that group back in. But we've really turned off a community for so many years that I think maybe there's a larger population related to not communism, but really the church's choice on recognizing homosexuality and welcoming that group. I just want to get your thoughts on that.
Mike, thanks for the call. Ryan?
Yeah, we mentioned this earlier. For many years, many religions, not all religions, many religions in the U.S. did kind of isolate and kind of separate out the LGBTQ community, and particularly the lesbian and gay community. And as a result, many of them left. Right now, this is not to mention, say, the Metropolitan Community Church, which is a church that's specifically designed for lesbian and gay individuals. Some are changing, right? So many of these more progressive religions have actually changed, become more embracing and welcoming of LGBTQ individuals. But Mike has a pretty good point, right? When you've got a track record of really separating these individuals out and rejecting their identity and rejecting who they are, it's hard to kind of get back into a position where you can say, oh, no, actually, we were wrong, and we now accept that. Some have been fairly successful, but a lot of people have just decided, you know what? No, I'm done. I don't need this, right? I'm happy to just leave religion altogether because of that history.
Mike, thanks for the call. Eleanor, she called in, couldn't stay with us. She says, it is hard to have conversations about religion that you have to defend your beliefs, and it gets negative. You know, is it becoming, you know, I guess, is there a wider acceptance of non-religious or non-affiliated people? Are these conversations, can they be uncomfortable or difficult?
They can be very uncomfortable. We are seeing some shifts on this as well, though. And I think, obviously, it depends on how you approach the conversations, right? But increasingly, people in the U.S. report that there isn't one true religion. Right? They're becoming more ecumenical in their worldview, where they're like, well, you know, believe what you want to believe. So they're less defensive about their own religious worldview. That's, again, not true for everybody. But increasingly, that's the trajectory that's happening, is that even if you're remaining religion, you're like, well, you know, all religions are fine, or it's okay to believe whatever you want to believe, as long as you allow me the same privilege. But yeah, absolutely, Eleanor's right that it can be really, really challenging when people hold these views very closely and they don't want anybody to challenge them. And at some level, non-religious worldviews and atheistic worldviews are inherently challenging to religious worldviews.
John called in to ask about the breakdown of faith in rural and urban areas. He says he isn't religious himself, but he feels there's a lack of community in small towns that lack churches, small towns without churches. Is there a difference in rural communities?
Rural communities do remain more religious. So we've seen more rapid kind of exiting of religion in urban communities. That's absolutely true, that the data do support that. The idea that there's breakdown of community is a really interesting one. There's a lot of research that looks at just rural-urban differences in community. I think this is an area that does deserve more research and more thinking about what is the consequence when religion breaks down in different communities. I don't want to engage in fear-mongering here, because if we look at other countries that are actually far less religious than the U.S., most of Western Europe, right, they've found ways to compensate for the breakdown of religion by finding other ways to build community. They have hiking clubs and bowling clubs, and they have book clubs, and they've found ways to replace it. Whether it's a perfect one-to-one replacement, I don't know that that's necessarily the case, but there are ways to try and think about that.
So, Ryan, what can we learn from more research of people with no religious affiliation? Why is this important?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the very simplest answer is this is probably the future in the U.S. It's the fastest growing segment of the quote-unquote religion, of the religious affiliation in the U.S. is the non-religious. They're growing by hundreds of thousands every year. So this genuinely is the trajectory that the U.S. is going. We'll see if it continues, but all of the evidence points towards it continuing. So at a minimum, this is happening, and people need to be aware of it. But on top of that, they're not a homogeneous group. The non-religious are not all the same people. They're very diverse. And we're just now starting to dig into that group to find the heterogeneity, the differences that exist among different non-religious people.
Ryan, thank you so much for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Ryan Cragen is a professor of sociology at the University of Tampa, co-author of Organized Secularism in the United States. You can find his article, by the way, Questions You Should Never Ask an Atheist Toward Better Measures of Non-Religion and Secularity. It's in the journal Secularism and Non-Religion, and we have a link at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.